LA has the largest jail system in the country.
You got people that been in jail just like one time in their life, can't get nothing because of whatever mistake they made.
I stole some ground turkey because I wanted to feed my family. We was hungry.
Off the Block, stories tracing the path from city block to cell block and back. Find it now at kcrw.com or subscribe on iTunes.
From the Independent Producer Project and KCRW.com, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Unfictional is a program of true stories and personal documentaries, and on this episode, Looping Swans. It's the complex story of Swan Lake, the Soviet Union, and the Russian people. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional.
It was absolutely funny story, absolutely funny story. On 18th of August 1991, it was Sunday, I remember that, and we had friends who came from, not from Moscow, and we had a party, and I was absolutely drunk. And when I woke up on Monday, so it was about, let's say, 6:45, something like this, feeling absolutely bad. For me, I just was trying to find the good position for my body to be a little bit relaxed because my headache. So, and I just switched on TV and just fall down on sofa. And I was on the sofa, TV set was in the other corner, and I heard that Swan Lake. For how long it was and what particular part of Swan Lake it was, I don't remember exactly, but it was Swan Lake and many, many times, like loop. Of course, so the first association that this is the great music. Tchaikovsky, who created this, he was great. But in about 15 minutes, I thought this was just excellent sign that, oh, someone died. Someone died.
Looping Swans. Once again.
Looping Swans.
Looping Swans.
Looping Swans.
Tutus, tanks, and Tchaikovsky.
The strangely entwined story of belly and Russian politics.
Started to use the Swan Lake for broadcasting on TV in the very beginning of '80s. Every time, you know, some serious leader died. Sort of symbol of something dramatic and somber.
Oh, Brezhnev died in 1983, yes, in 1983.
Brezhnev умер, очень хорошо помню.
Brezhnev's death was actually first occasion when they used Swan Lake.
Swan Lake was maybe not only in the morning, it was the whole day.
What happened next, they started to die, you know, almost every several months.
Andropov was the next Communist Party General Secretary, but much more reasonable to say he was next to die.
Yuriy Vladimirovich Andropova.
Andropov, конечно.
When the country is ruled by octogenarians, of course, it gives rise to jokes.
It was a joke about that why Brezhnev died, because there was nobody close to him to change a battery. So next to die was Andropov, after Andropov, Chernenko.
Another general secretary dies, another general secretary dies.
Brezhnev, Chernenko,
Brezhnev, Andropov, Chernenko.
Because it's repetition, you know. So another one bites the dust. Yeah? It's the same, you know.
Every time it was with Swan Lake.
They knew immediately that something was going on.
Every Soviet guy was able to understand.
Central Committee of Communist Party, they were not very fast. They had to spend several days, you know, discussing what words to use.
Swan Lake, it was a patch. It was a patch on your mouth when you have nothing to say. It's a musical pause. We'll stop our game just for a moment. It's a musical pause.
Swan Lake under the Tsars before 1917 was never the main belly of the Imperial Theater. It failed in Moscow at its premiere. Other stagings were also unsuccessful, and Tchaikovsky gave up. He didn't want to go back to belly. And only after 13 years, the director of the Imperial Theater in St. Petersburg convinced Tchaikovsky to take on another belly. He wrote Sleeping Beauty, and you could say that it marked his triumphant return to this strange genre. And as soon as Tchaikovsky died, they decided to put on a memorial concert in his honor, in which they decided to restage the forgotten ballet Swan Lake. It was 1893. Everyone had forgotten about it. It wasn't playing anywhere. But for some reason, an official Russian critic called it a revolution in ballet. What was revolutionary about it? The cast? The production? For whatever reason, people saw in it the Russian soul. This forgotten portion of Swan Lake was unexpectedly a hit. And so they decided, aha, let's restage the old belly.
In 1991, I was 21. I was married, and at that moment in August, I was already pregnant, but it was sort of, I was not fully aware of it yet. Like
August 19th, 1991. I woke up in my flat. It was a small flat in the very, you know, edge of Gorky.
I was 16, and I was in the Ukraine, in the region of...
We were in a country house. Well, we didn't have much connection with the world because it's 1990s. It's not like everyone has a mobile.
We turn on the TV.
I remember only black and white picture.
All we could see was the Swan Lake.
You know, bell ring, black swan and a white swan.
They kept repeating and repeating one and the same piece of a Swan Lake. The TV was showing ballet and the radio was playing the melody.
Broadcasted in loops, with occasional announcements of the state of emergency.
Обращение главам государств и правительств и генеральному секретарю ООН в соответствии с Конституцией и законами СССР в отдельных местах
Советских Союзов.
We couldn't get any information from TV and we were just switching and switching and switching.
По чрезвычайному положению.
We realized that something really bad is happening, something seriously bad.
Таким образом не означают отказ от курса
на... About 15 or 20 minutes, so they started to explain what was going on.
The USSR Vice President Gennady Yanayev has taken over presidential powers.
Gorbachev is seriously ill and they have to change something. Actually, they took the power and these people, they were not elected.
Lots of wonderful things are failures on first performance. And it might seem strange that it's kind of a courtly piece and it becomes such a kind of Soviet hit. But there were reasons why it happened. After the very radical historical shift after the Russian Revolution of 1917, Луначарский, who was the first minister of culture, he was the one who decided to preserve lots of cultural things. So he argued with Lenin that they should keep the Bolshoi Theater open. Yeah, Lenin wanted to close it down. There were lots of people who wanted to build culture completely anew from scratch, you know, destroy everything. So Lunacharsky protected various things that he considered important. The Bolshoi Theatre, conservatoires, the ballet school, they were all saved and preserved more or less as they were. People were still allowed to perfect the art of ballet like before. When we think of the Soviet government, they were educated people and they loved this kind of art. They didn't want to get rid of it. Neither Lenin nor Stalin were fans of the avant-garde. Personal tastes also contributed to this. And lots of other people valued high culture as something that was for everyone. As Lunacharsky famously sort of said, this is champagne, you know, you might think it's not for you, but try it, you know, it's bubbly, it's wonderful, you know, now you can drink it, something like that. I'm sort of half inventing it now, but this was the idea, that now it belongs to you, you can take it, you can enjoy it, you will be richer because of this. And Tchaikovsky's stake started going up in the 30s, and yes, he became one of the great, almost Soviet composers. He became part of Soviet culture.
There is a ballet, and it keeps repeating and repeating and repeating. I mean, the piece is over, and it repeats again. And I'm 9 years old, I'm watching TV, and the next day they were showing already tanks going into Moscow in the news. And I remember how terrified I was.
That was my ritual. I woke up and switched on so-called voices from abroad. BBC Russian service, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. They were speaking, you know, in the same dramatic voices. That is Putin, that, you know, Gorbachev is somewhere in Crimea.
I was asleep when my wife woke me up. It was about 6:30. And she said, wake up, Gorbachev is arrested.
It sounded so unexpected and so out of the blue. Almost like you switch on the radio and you hear that, you know, people from Mars have arrived.
The committee has issued an address to the Soviet people. The message says that the policy of reforms started on Mikhail Gorbachev's initiative has reached a deadlock.
You know, before everything in this country, it went up with extreme speed. I mean, democracy, new goods, money, a lot of new ways, of new possibilities. You started doing what you really wanted.
People were already kind of energized by the, you know, 5 years of perestroika. And it was very difficult to come to terms that the clock could be turned back.
Imagine you are a rocket going right up in the sky and you are stopped immediately between sky and earth. That was my first feeling.
Ну, понимаете, этот балет сопровождает... Я человек советский.
I'm a child of the Soviet Union, and naturally, this ballet was a constant thread running through our lives. We watch it twice a year, regularly. On International Workers' Day and the anniversary of the October Revolution, the only channel of the Soviet Central TV would serve up Swan Lake as dessert. After going to the demonstrations, we'd sit around the table and my parents would get drunk to the sound of the ballet. It would always be the same version on TV, a performance at the Bolshoi Theatre with Maya Plisetskaya dancing the lead with her usual partner.
Well, yes, that was the ballet you would see so many times as a child.
Of course, my parents, they brought me to the theater.
Gosh, I have no idea. I mean, how would you know how many times you saw it?
There was a lot of Tchaikovsky everywhere.
at school. It was very accessible
on the radio.
Every Soviet child knew what the ballet was
on TV.
It's everywhere.
Just a normal background.
You walk along the street, you hear Swan Lake or something else by Tchaikovsky.
Couldn't escape it, really.
Basically, I think I know it by heart.
It just sort of becomes in the background, one of those things which is always there.
There wasn't much variety.
Because we didn't have so much things to consume in the Soviet time.
Very few things were produced, just generally. There was very little choice.
To spend your spare time meant Soviet time to drink vodka.
So you would mainly go to the Swan Lake, the Nutcracker, again by Tchaikovsky.
To watch horrible TV.
There was a lot of repetition and boredom in everything. In the same way, if you see the Swan Lake, you know, 100 times on TV, you stop noticing it. It just becomes wallpaper.
Yes, this is good music, but it's so overused. Well, I cannot even hear it, you know, because it's stuffed down your mind day after day after day after day after year, decade after decade. You cannot even, you feel, stop it.
I remember very well, I was visiting my father on that day. He was in hospital, so on Leninsky Prospect, and suddenly, you know, his neighbors said, oh, you know, the tanks are going. We came out, my father came out in his hospital dressing gown to watch this with horror.
Tanks and armored vehicles are on the streets in many parts of Moscow. Forces loyal to the hardline communists are reported to have crashed through barricades.
Tens of thousands of people gathered at Boris Yeltsin's Russian parliament in Moscow this morning that has become the unofficial headquarters of democratic resistance to yesterday.
Все это заставляет нас объявить незаконным пришествие власти так называемый комитет.
And of course, I remember when the tanks, you know, came, and what we were trying to do, or what people were trying to do, was talk to the soldiers, you know, and try to get them on our side, because they had no idea what they were doing. I mean, they were given orders, they didn't know what was going on. So, you know, bringing the food, bringing, you know, sharing jokes with them, that was the idea, and to have the army on your side.
More and more reports are coming in to suggest pockets of resistance in cities across the Russian Federation.
But it's still unclear whether Mr. Yeltsin can carry the momentum forward and persuade Russians to join the general strike he called to topple the leaders of the coup. Another big
rally was held. The only thing I remember sort of my act of courage was that I... when I was in the metro and saw that people were just going as normal. There was none, you know, I think, God, they don't know, you know, what's going on. So I just took out my eyebrow pencil and started writing it, like, Yeltsin calls a general strike on inside the metro station. So that was my only contribution. And then I went home, and of course, you know, my mother said, oh, you're not going out again, you know, this is... We shouldn't, you know, take part and be safe.
The connection between the authorities and the ballet was always there. Even when power changed hands, the Romanovs replaced by the Czechists by the NKVD, the NKVD by the KGB. It was tradition, and the connections remained.
Any secretary of Communist Party had to go to Bolshoi Theater. The Bolshoi, it was a part of establishment machine, like a brick in the wall of Kremlin, like a brick in the wall of the great Communist Party.
Это история, которая описана многократно в мемуарах Плисецкой.
The dancer Maya Plisetskaya describes it all in her memoirs. How Khrushchev started going to the ballet, and when international relations began opening up, how he had to show the visiting foreign dignitaries something beautiful. And what are you going to show them? Opera? With long hours of singing in Russian that no one can understand? With ballet, you can show them a beautiful woman. That's the simple reality of it. The Bolshoi didn't have a huge repertoire, so it was simple. Give them Maya Plisetskaya in Swan Lake. The music is catchy. It's melodic. Plisetskaya describes it all in her memoir with a good deal of irony and humor. How poor Khrushchev had to sit through 185 performances of Swan Lake half asleep, but he would sleep like a horse with his eyes open.
In Kremlin, there is a special telephone network of two types which exists nowadays, Kremlin 1 and Kremlin 2. And there is a telephone. It's still on the table of the director of the Bolshoi Theater. Can you imagine something like that, say, in the Met Opera, for example, or in Covent Garden? It's absolutely impossible to imagine that Prime Minister of Britain is calling using the local Downing Street telephone network to the director of the Covent Garden Royal Opera. In Kremlin, it's still possible.
To people manning the barricades here, the first sign the coup was faltering lay in the fact there was no all-out attack on the Russian Federation headquarters. Three civilians had died last night when light...
The 21st of August was simply the end of the story. And the key event was just near my windows here. There was a burning trolley bus and three guys died and... Well, I was crushed, really. And at the same time, in the morning, it was obvious that it is the end of the coup.
By Mr. Gorbachev, recognizing the role played in the defeat of the coup by Boris Yeltsin, the Russian leader, he now appears to be on his way back to the Kremlin, and I think intends to move very fast against the people who
are very quickly
to re-establish the governmental control of the Soviet Union in his own name.
President gets the cheers. Boris Yeltsin, President of Russia, thanked by Mikhail Gorbachev for his courage, appearing before tens of thousands of supporters.
But then when it was all over and we went on the final rally, that was a wonderful day, and I remember that that was the only time when I understood what collective happiness might mean.
The crowd moved through Red Square, mocking one symbol, Lenin's tomb, then another square and another symbol, Lubyanka, the headquarters and prison of the KGB.
And then I go out to Lubyanka, and like with my heart beating too, because I got this news that I have a baby boy and that his heart is beating.
As cranes were brought in to topple the statue of oppression, some reflected on what the new revolution would bring.
And suddenly I just raised my head and I thought that I'm going mad because the huge statue of Dzerzhinsky, Felix Dzerzhinsky, which was always standing in the middle of the square, the statue was high in the air.
As the noose went around the neck of Felix Dzerzhinsky, founder of the KGB, officers inside could only watch in disbelief. Outside, people were...
And that was just unbelievable. It was just when one very big moment in my life, very happy and exciting moment, was reinforced by another moment in the life of the country. I really enjoyed watching him floating in the air. It was just so exciting that I almost forgot that I have a baby boy in my belly.
So everything was absolutely perfect. We won. And my hope was that I would never see Swan Lake again in my life, actually.
Of course, now it's very sort of bitter to remember this because it was all about hopes that never realized. And in fact, you know, were probably misplaced completely. But there was a sense, you know, if you end the story there, it was a wonderful story and a wonderful moment. But you have to end it there.
I didn't know what to do, but when I understood that there was one like on all the TV channels, so you see my head, they disappear. The younger people, so of course they don't remember this. But let's say I'm somewhere and there is TV set and I can see that there is one like on each channel. So first of all, of course, I will smile because this will remind me something, yes? And second, so maybe there will be an event like 1991 and something will be changed in the country. Maybe.
Последний раз журналисты видели его 5 марта во время встречи с премьер-министром Италии Маттео Ренци. Напомним, ранее...
Everyone was trying to guess what happened. Is he alive at all?
In March 2015, Putin was missing from the public scene.
He disappeared for 10 days, I suppose. No sign of him on TV, on the radio, newspapers, nothing.
Either he died, or he gave birth, or there was a coup.
The Ukrainian web designer Andrei Kapranov created a website with this dance of the little swans going in loops. And the count of the days, hours and minutes Putin was missing.
No more wondering what happened to the Russian president. He's back. Re-emerging for a meeting this morning with the president of Kyrgyzstan.
The art of reading between the lines was very, very developed in the Soviet Union, but don't exaggerate. We couldn't find any information inside the Swan Lake. Just the fact of appearing at Swan Lake said something. Whether they are speaking or not, I mean the authorities, they still inform us somehow by playing special music, by showing special pictures, by just keeping silence. That means a lot, you know.
That means a lot, you know. That means a lot, you know.
That means a lot, you know.
Looping Swans was produced by Charles Maines and Cicely Fell. Looping Swans. It was a Falling Tree production for BBC Radio 4. Looping Swans was produced by Charles Maines and Cicely Fell. It was a Falling Tree production for BBC.
I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The editor is Nick White. The associate producer is Carla Green. You can find links, information, and photos about this episode at our website, kcrw.com/unfictional, and take a listen to our entire archive of programs there, too. We're on Twitter at Unfictional, or like us on Facebook. I hope you'll join me next time for Unfictional from kcrw.com.